Bama Beat. From the sports desk of the Tuscaloosa News and TideSports.com. Now, the Bama Beat Podcast.
Welcome back to the Bama Beat. I'm Ben Jones here with Cecil Hurd again. We're going to continue our 2018 position series preview. We're going to be talking about the defensive backs today. I don't think we have a shortage of topics to discuss when it comes to this group, do we, Cecil?
We don't. It's kind of like it was somewhat similar with the linebackers, although that's gotten even more so in the past week. But again, it's almost like a cooking show where they give you like half the ingredients and you got to figure how you're going to make a pie as good as last year's pie. Yeah.
They just tell you, here's some rhubarb. Yeah, there's no flour, but you have to figure it out.
We've got some non-gluten flour and and we don't have any butter, but we've got some goat cheese. So let's see what we can make out of that.
There's some fat in the goat cheese. You can make a pie crust with goat cheese. I don't think the chemistry works on that.
No, but that's what people expect. You know, they expect it to be as good as it was.
Yeah. You know, Phil Steele, whose preseason stuff I respect as much as anyone's and who probably does as much research as anyone, has Alabama's secondary, I believe, ranked 8th in the nation going into this season, which in most years you would say, well, what's wrong? In this year's edition, you probably have to wonder how he gets them that high, considering everything they've lost.
Again, I'm so hesitant because I don't pretend to know, to be able to sit here and discuss secondaries in the MAC,
yeah,
you know, as to who's
who or should, even the Pac-12,
or even the Pac-12. You know, who should be 33rd? Where should Air Force's secondary be? You know, mm-hmm. Alabama's got some highly recruited guys, some of whom have played and some of them who hadn't. And they've got a reputation for getting it fixed back there.
Yeah.
They've also got the number 11 pick in the NFL draft is in Miami now, playing for the Dolphins. So he's not around. Levi Wallace isn't around. Several guys are not around. Ronnie Harrison's not around.
Mm-hmm.
So, like you, that almost leads you to believe, well, how did they get to 8th?
Yeah. We can go through a quick rundown of what they lost from last year. Minkah Fitzpatrick, probably the best player on last year's team, was the highest drafted player off of the team last year, maybe the best defensive back of the Nick Saban era here at Alabama, almost certainly the most versatile back of the Nick Saban era here.
Yeah, most awarded.
Yeah. Levi Wallace, the great story of former walk-on who ended up becoming a starter, making a lot of plays for them, did not get drafted but is in camp, I believe, with the Buffalo Bills as we record this on July 12th, trying to make an NFL career happen for him. Anthony Averett, another guy who wasn't all that highly recruited. You didn't really hear that much about him for his first couple of years on campus as he redshirted, kind of worked his way up, waited his time as a redshirt junior and senior, started and was a really effective player for them. Ronnie Harrison
was drafted.
Yes. Anthony Averett was drafted. Ronnie Harrison with the Jacksonville Jaguars right now, I believe, was a third-round pick, if mm-hmm. I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. Was a guy who played a lot as a true freshman and then was a starter for 2 years. Hootie Jones, a senior, got injured in the Auburn game, so he did not play in the postseason, but was a starter for all of the year before that. And Tony Brown, who played mostly in the nickel role, played a little bit of cornerback during his time. Obviously a freakishly talented athlete who will also have a chance in the NFL, assuming he can kind of put things together at that level.
With the Rams, I
think. I think that's what it is, yeah. So in any event, that's 6 players from last year's secondary. You can make the argument that it was the top 6 players for Alabama's secondary last year. You could argue perhaps that Deontay Thompson played a little bit more than Tony Brown. He'd be the guy coming back who probably has the most experience from this previous season. Probably a guy that, as much as anyone in the secondary, you can pencil in and say he's going to be a starter. He, I think, played very well against Clemson and then in the national championship game against Georgia. I think he looks like a solid player. Don't know quite what his ceiling is yet, what he'll look like as a week in, week out guy. But at least there's a piece that we can start with and say he'll probably be there.
Yeah, the question is, I think he's absolutely capable and has been and will be a good SEC player. But again, you're talking about Jim Thorpe Award winners and first round draft choices being your number one guy for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Not just Minka, but you know, whether it's Eddie Jackson or Landon Collins or
Marlon Humphrey
or Marlon Humphrey,
Cyrus Jones.
Right. This isn't a knock on Deontay. You know, maybe he's a guy that you'd if your roster were like that, he's your number three or number four guy, and you're really pleased with that, and he has a great year. But there's a different role, a different identity, I think, for the number one guys in that secondary. For one thing, you're the one that Nick Saban yells at when things go wrong. But there are other aspects to that job, and leadership being one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and communication is also a really important job out there at safety. If there's any kind of changes that they tend to make with the coverage before the snaps, usually it's the safeties that have to get that and then communicate it to the guys on the outside. It doesn't usually go from one sideline to the other one. It's usually the guys in the middle who have to communicate it. Not sure who that would be on this year's defense, but that's something that you'll want to keep an eye out for probably as the season begins. You could probably guess that Xavier McKinney has the inside track to be the other starting safety, although certainly there's a long fall camp coming and a lot of practice time, and a lot could happen in between now and then.
And there are some guys that are probably more so at safety than at corner. There's some depth. There's Kyrick McDonald is a guy who could factor in there. There are some others who we'll talk about, but there's not a whole lot behind, unless you think that all four of their freshman signees are going to come in and make immediate impact, all four of them. It's a thinner group than usual.
Yeah, I don't think that it would be realistic to expect all four of those guys to come in and have a role. Certainly not to the level that you saw guys like Ronnie Harrison or Minka Fitzpatrick have a role when they came in as freshmen. Minka playing mostly as the star or the nickel role, whichever you would prefer to call it. And then Ronnie coming and playing mostly in the money packages, the dime. But they're going to need some of those freshmen to play somewhere, wherever it is, whenever it is. By the time they got to the end of spring practice, based on some of the injuries they had, guys that they had moved from one side of the ball to the other, they didn't have a two deep of scholarship players. When Mac Jones was out there in the A-Day game tearing apart the second team defense, there were a couple of walk-ons that were out there, not to take anything away from Mac Jones, but that's just a statement of fact. Obviously, there's a different level of athlete, a walk-on from scholarship player at a school like the University of Alabama.
Right. And those guys are going to get tested, and they're going to get tested in the first game. And everybody's like, well, Louisville, Alabama's a 25-point favorite. But Bobby Petrino will have some stuff drawn up to get some one-on-ones and to get some isolations and to get some matchups that he thinks are favorable matchups. And they have some athletes at wide receiver.
Yeah,
and
they have a couple of returning starters.
Yeah,
a new quarterback, obviously, is a guy named Jawan Pass, but he was a highly recruited guy. I think Alabama even took a look at him when he was in high school.
Yeah, you know, it's an alternative storyline, as they say in the Star Wars movies. But you know, if Lamar was back there, it'd be pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think Alabama would still be favored, and probably still be favored by a couple of touchdowns at this point, just based on the overall roster.
Louisville has defensive issues and so forth. But
it would be fun to see Lamar Jackson out there. And, man, things could
– might not be fun for Alabama fans.
Well, for you and I and
but again,
detached observers, it could get kind of hairy pretty quick.
That's in the realm of hypothetical, although the inside story – I'm hearing one side of it from Alabama, but is that when Louisville agreed to this game in Orlando, really up until not too long before the declaration date for the NFL draft, they thought they'd have Lamar Jackson for this game. So that's one reason, you know, that they wouldn't have been reluctant to I think that would have been a much bigger event than it's going to be on that first weekend.
Yeah. Might not have been more fun for Alabama fans, like you mentioned, but would have been more fun for college football fans there as that opening weekend game.
I think so. But he's not there. But whoever's back there, he's got some receivers. Bobby's been a great play caller at every stop along the way. And they'll do some things. So some guys are going to get thrown in the fire pretty quick.
Yeah. Tommy and I recorded the podcast earlier this summer where we talked about which quarterbacks will have the greatest chance to test Alabama's secondary, because with a new secondary, you wonder if it's going to be able to be exploited at times. He'd mentioned Louisville, I think, because of Bobby Petrino for that reason. We also talked about Auburn, Jarrett Stidham. Arkansas State has a really good starter coming back. So it'll be interesting to see. I don't think
Missouri.
Yeah.
Although
Drew Locke was definitely mentioned in that podcast.
What Drew's got to have is some time, because what Drew can do, I wouldn't say he's the greatest Tom Brady type technician, but now Drew's got an arm. You know, he can throw it. He can throw the 50, throw the 60, whatever he needs to do if he has enough time to do it.
Yeah, that'll be probably up to the front seven to have something to say about that.
Yeah.
When they're looking at those wide receivers, the guys lining up across from them, if Alabama were to play today, which it's not playing today as we record this in the middle of July, would probably be Savion Smith at cornerback, a junior college transfer who started his career at LSU and was at one point a five-star recruit. Nick Saban spoke pretty highly of him during the spring, sounded like they liked what they saw out of him in those first 15 practices. On the other side, Trevon Diggs would be the other candidate at cornerback, I would say. He's a guy who was competing for the job last year, actually started the first game of the season against Florida State, if you guys remember that. I think he might have given up a touchdown pass or struggled a little bit in the first quarter before Levi Wallace came in and kind of took the job at that point.
Yeah, and let's be honest. You know, those are four-star, five-star guys. I mean, those are high-ceiling, high-potential guys if everything comes together for them. And it would be huge for Alabama if they did. You know, that's – Diggs has – you know, he's done some offense, done some defense. You know, I think they've really committed to making him a defensive player. So we'll see how that works out. But those are the kind of athletes, at least, that you're used to seeing in an Alabama secondary, for sure.
Yeah. In one sense, those guys – probably as athletes might be a little bit of an upgrade over what you saw last year.
Probably,
you know,
so.
Levi at the end of the year was playing at about 165 pounds, as he told us. Anthony Averett did a really good job, but was probably about in the 185 range. You know, I don't think he was 6 feet tall.
Tony Brown is a different deal.
Yeah, Tony Brown, Minka Fitzpatrick are kind of different, but the cornerbacks on the outside probably were not the most impressive specimens that Alabama has run out there in recent years.
No, but you know, that's, again, we don't want to come on here and sound like, oh, it's terrible, it's negative. I mean, those are two guys that most of the teams in the SEC would like to have in the mix at corners. I'm not saying they'd absolutely start ahead of any corners in the SEC, but they'd play for everybody in the SEC.
Yeah. Trevon Diggs in particular, I think the coaches still really like some of the things that he can do. I might be wrong. My memory, obviously, but I think in spring, Nick Saban was asked about Trevon Diggs and mentioned that he's had a little bit of a difficult time adjusting to the college game at some point, because a guy who's athletic as he is, with the speed, who can close like he can, who can jump like he can, he said he made a lot of plays with his eyes in high school. And being able to do that in high school is great, but when you start to do that in college, you can get yourself in trouble, because the players at college know how to take advantage of your eyes. They can watch you and read you, and you just can't do the same things that you did in high school. And so that's what he's had to learn now.
Yeah, you've got obviously there's some good competition in high school, and then you play some teams where the quarterback throws an out pattern and he looks like he's shot putting a frozen butterball turkey out there. You know?
Did you just come up with that? Have you been?
No, Ben. I was out earlier this morning, shot putting a frozen butterball turkey. Yeah, you know, just tried to think of what would take some time to arrive at a receiver, and that's what I came up with.
Yes. It's fantastic imagery. I really like it.
If you have such a quarterback, then a guy can make up a lot of ground. A defensive back with that kind of speed and athletic ability can make up a lot of ground. So.
Yeah. The other player who looks like he has the inside track on the starting job coming out of spring practice would be Shaheem Carter there in the nickel role. Yeah, yeah. Obviously, that's as much of a starting position as anything on the defense now. They're in nickel more than they're in regular, which means that he's going to be on the field more than Alabama would have four linebackers on the field.
I thought he came on and played well last year. I thought in the role that he had, I thought he showed some potential.
Yeah. I think he played a little bit as a true freshman, maybe even in the national championship game. I can't remember if they might have had some injuries in that game, and they kind of had to throw him out there. Obviously, a difficult situation for him trying to cover Hunter Renfrow and Mike Williams and guys like that. Might have seemed a little bit overwhelmed as a freshman. I didn't get the sense that he was totally overwhelmed last year. Had a much better idea of, you know, where he was, what he was supposed to be doing, which probably bodes well for him. That nickel role, obviously, you have to be able to do a lot. You have to be able to cover a slot receiver, whether that's a little guy like Hunter Renfrow, whether that's a big guy like a tight end that they're flexing out there. Maybe it's a running back or a fullback coming out of the backfield. You have run support responsibilities since you're kind of there on the edge on that side. There's a lot that goes into it. And so as a junior, you hope that he's had enough time now to learn Alabama's system that he'd be ready for it.
Yeah, and I think they wouldn't put you in that situation after 3 years if they didn't feel like you could mentally handle the assignments and reads and calls. And so I think that again, I don't know that he's that elite five-star athlete, but I think he's a guy that they've got some confidence in.
Yeah. Another guy who played last year as a true freshman, mostly on special teams, but I think people liked what they saw from him, was Daniel Wright. Yeah, who was running with the second team at safety in spring practice. But I would assume he would at least get a look in fall camp. Doesn't mean that he's going to win the job. Doesn't mean that he's going to be out there rotating in and out. But I think the coaches like what they saw out of him as a freshman and like where his future is.
I would agree with that.
Other guys that Alabama has on the depth chart currently, like you mentioned, Kyreek McDonald is one of them. He's going into his sophomore year, I think. We don't have a roster right in front of us here. Nigel Knott is a guy who is going into, I think he just finished, he's going to be a redshirt sophomore.
Really highly recruited guy.
Yeah. You know,
really big-time high school athlete out of Mississippi, and has been kind of quiet. His career at Alabama has been kind of quiet so far. So this is if he's going to make a big step, this would be the year to do it.
Yeah, and that's the thing about the secondary right now is that there is opportunity, a bountiful opportunity for anyone there that's on the roster to go out there and find a job, to hold a job down for the next couple of years, because they've got all five or six positions open in the secondary, however you want to break it down. Anybody else on the current roster that we're leaving off at the moment?
Jared Maiden, I guess, could play some.
Yes, Jared Maiden would be one. Some injuries have also limited some of these guys during spring practice, which might be one reason why you didn't hear as much about them.
And then Slade Bolden went through the spring.
Yes, Slade Bolden was a signee from Louisiana. Probably can play slot wide receiver or maybe a little bit of running back, played high school quarterback for his team. But I think the circumstances in the spring were such that they needed a couple more bodies in the secondary, and so they put him out there at safety mostly.
Yeah, you used to say you'd look at a guy and say, well, he'll probably redshirt. What that means now is you may see him against Utah State. You may see him against Citadel. See him in the second half of a game that gets – three or four touchdowns. So it's a little bit different. You know, the guys just don't put the new rule in place where you can play four games, any four games, and still redshirt, guys aren't just going to disappear, you know, and be taking a redshirt, and you'll still at least see them.
Yeah, you'll get a look at probably all of these guys at some point. Whether that's just the Citadel or what.
And in some ways, Citadel will not be the most competitive game of the year, but it'll be intriguing for that reason, to see who plays and who doesn't, and how they kind of are shuffling that, and who they're holding out, and so forth.
Yeah. You know, one guy we haven't talked about, and I don't know if there's a podcast that we might talk about him if we don't talk about him here, would be Keaton Anderson, a guy who's been on the team for what seems like forever and has been a nice special teams player for them. Probably not going to make an impact in the secondary, although I guess you never know. Given what the second team looks like at this point. But it's a guy who's probably performed admirably in the role that they brought him in to do.
I think he's done. I think he's fulfilled their expectations and been a good player for him. I just don't know that he's going to be in this starting secondary mix that we're talking about.
Yeah. We got your shout out there, Keaton. So there are some really highly ranked freshmen coming in. We already talked about some of the other guys in the signing class, like Slade Bolden and Savion Smith. However, Patrick Surtain was probably Alabama's biggest victory, at least on National Signing Day itself. Maybe was the biggest surprise of the class overall. He's a five-star kid, son of a former NFL player who had a very long career. I think LSU really thought they were going to end up getting him, probably to the point until he put the Alabama hat on, or maybe if he called the coaches right before to tell them what was happening. But he's a guy that will have a chance to push for one of the starting cornerback jobs in fall, presumably.
Yeah, I think that was just one of those cases of Alabama going out and recruiting like the 800-pound grizzly bear. You know, look, we got to have a guy here. You're the best guy in the country. Coach knows your dad from the NFL. Let's get this done. You know, let's works for you, works for us. And they've recruited a few guys like that, but you know, where they go and find the best center, in J.K. Scott's case, find the best punter, and just doesn't matter where they're necessarily from geographically, they just you know, they're going to go to a top five program, or in Surtain's case, there were some other ties to LSU, but I really think that was just a case where they said, you know, we need the best guy out there. And he was generally rated as the best guy at that position.
Yeah. I don't know, since we don't get to watch practice, and I don't necessarily know his skill set well enough to know if he's a guy who might come in and push for that nickel job, if he has kind of the physical skills that you would need in that role, or if he's a guy that you would look at exclusively at corner. I don't think he's a guy that would come in and play safety, but you know, the safeties and corners in Alabama's defense in the last few years have become much closer to being interchangeable than what they were previously.
Right.
In any event, he's a guy that I think will have as good a chance as anyone in fall camp, and it still is pretty unusual to see true freshmen playing a big role in Alabama's secondary because of how difficult it can be to learn the pattern matching and the man and the zone, because they do it all.
And he can be situational, you know. Mm-hmm. Maybe a guy who's on the field in second and long, third and long, and not on first and 10.
Yeah, probably why a guy like Ronnie Harrison could play in dime as a freshman.
Right.
Yeah. Josh Jobe, I believe, is another guy from South Florida who's as part of the class. He would have probably also at least another look in the two deep. You know, not sure if he's a guy who's going to push for starting time, although we'll find out a little bit closer as we get to the start of the season. And then Jalen Armour Davis was, I believe, the top-ranked recruit in the state of Alabama last year, a four-star guy from the Mobile area. He's also probably more of a cornerback-type prospect just based on his size. And I think that they would get a look at him as well because, like we talked about, coming out of spring, there were not a whole lot of bodies out there. Some of these guys are going to be needed just for the second team, if nothing else.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how much he's used this year. I just wonder, strictly from a physical standpoint, you know, because I think he played in the All-Star games at 165, 170. So I think just how much he can do physically against a 215-pound, 6'4", 215-pound receiver is going to be a something that we'll need to see and something he'll develop, I think, over his career. But I don't know where he'll be.
Yeah.
Day one.
Athletically, I think they really like his skills. I think he did a good job as a punt returner and played in a few different positions for his high school team. So he's a guy to keep an eye on for the future. And then the last defensive back signee in the class is Eddie Smith, was another guy they went and took out of Louisiana, where Alabama's had a little bit more success lately. Probably also another victory over LSU, although I'd have to go double check that.
Yeah. And again, don't know. And it's hard to find out because you can't, A, you can't see much practice, and B, as prolific as Nick Saban is with some of his answers, his favorite questions are not people who come in with that laundry list of nine freshmen and say, how's this guy doing? How's this guy doing? How's this guy doing? He loses patience with that pretty quick. And reverts to the, well, he's a freshman, you know, what do you want me to tell you?
Yeah.
So.
But if you can figure out who the one guy is who's doing a good job and ask him about that one guy, then he usually is pretty receptive to that particular question.
Yeah. He just doesn't like it where, and some people do this, you know, you've got 9 5-star recruits or 4-star recruits in the class. Mm-hmm. How's he doing? And Nick will go through a couple of those, but then it's you don't get much.
Yeah. Defensive backs is another position with a new coach.
Now, he will talk about defensive backs if you get him in the right move, because that's his in the right move.
He's the GA for the defensive backs. Yeah. He always says that. So, aw, shucks. Like, you know,
right.
I'm not sure I believe you, Nick, that you're actually the GA for the defensive backs. But in any event, the actual position coach for the defensive backs is Carl Scott this year, who's a newcomer to the staff, was briefly, I think, for you know a couple of days, going to be the defensive coordinator for Billy Napier's staff at Louisiana Lafayette, but mostly spent the last couple of years at Texas Tech, where he was the secondary coach there. He's a much younger guy than what they'd had previously. Will be another guy that it'll be interesting to see how his transition to the staff goes.
Yes, even though
Derek Ansley was pretty young, I probably should couch that.
Yeah. Even though Coach Scott is has a GA in Nick Saban, I don't think we'll see the day where he's said, Nick, go get me a bottle of water.
Yeah,
I don't think it's that kind of GA.
Yeah, we need another bag of balls here.
Yeah, we need another bag of balls. You need to throw. Although Nick likes to throw, but.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it works quite that way.
Yeah. For those of you all, we do get to see part of practice. It's usually just the individual position drills at the very start. And during that time, you can usually see the safeties or one half of the secondary with one line of players, and the cornerbacks or the other half of the secondary with the other line of players. And Nick Saban is usually working with one of those groups, and the defensive backs coach is usually working with the other ones. And that's kind of just part of how practice starts before they move on to some other stuff. So Nick is pretty hands-on with the secondary and what we see for the individual portion of practice there. He's not wandering from position to position. He's not looking over the shoulders of the quarterbacks or talking with his coordinators. He is with the defensive backs during the individual portion of Alabama's practices.
And he's got plenty of work to do this year, so good for him.
Yeah. Do you think that makes him happy? Do you think it makes him worried?
I think he enjoys coaching the position. I sure do.
Yeah.
Worried... He's like every coach. If he had 9 5-stars, he'd want 10, and he's closer to having them than some of the teams they'll play. So, this is just a puzzle, and he's got to put the pieces together.
Yeah. I think ultimately they'll at least be solid in the secondary. It would just be very unusual to see Alabama struggling on the back end of the defense like that. Like you said, they do have plenty of talent as part of this group still.
Yeah, and in all these – position previews, you know, you're taking parts and you're trying to derive what will be a whole. Things are a little different for the secondary through no action of anybody in the secondary this week than they were last week, because it looks like the best pass rusher may be out from all the season or most of the season, with Terrell Lewis out. So changes things at Terrell's position, obviously, but it may also change some things that you do in the secondary because you don't feel like you can get as much pressure on a passer.
Yeah. I think that's probably a good place to leave this. We're about 30 minutes in right now. So next one coming up on Monday or Tuesday, we're going to have a preview of Alabama's tight ends for you guys. We're going to release that one while we're in Atlanta for SEC Media Days. And then once we come back from Atlanta, we'll probably sit down, do a quick podcast recapping whatever happened during SEC Media Days. Maybe Steve Spurrier will show up at some point. I would like to see him just have a legacy 10 or 12 minute speech or a bit, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, just have a spot for him to
For
him to come in and do his thing. And Les Miles also.
Yeah. Since Les is trying to be an actor, we could have Les go up there and monologue for a little bit.
I would love to have 10 minutes of Q&A with Les now that he doesn't even have the restraint of coaching an actual team.
Yeah. God, he could just tell you about his summer vacation for the whole time.
He might, or he might talk about football.
Yeah. All right, folks. Thanks for listening. By the way, if you haven't left us a review or a star rating yet, you could do that. It really helps us, helps other folks find the podcast. We hit a pretty significant milestone in our subscribers last week. Don't want to tell you guys exactly what it is, but it's good news. So thanks for you guys who have been listening for so long. We really appreciate it. We hope you guys continue to listen throughout the summer and throughout this fall. So for Cecil Hurt, I'm Ben Jones, and this is the Bama Beat.